This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Tomorrow evening, the winners of this year's National Book Awards will be announced at a dinner in Manhattan. My guest, Linda McCarriston, is one of the four nominees in the poetry category. The poems in her new book, Eva Mary, are so personal and so disturbing, she had been cautioned against writing and publishing them. The subject of this new book is how her father sexually and physically abused her and her mother. The book has already won the 1991 Terence DePré Prize for Poetry, an award named in honor of the late author who is best known for his study of life in Hitler's death camps. Eva Mary is McCarriston's second collection of poems. McCarriston grew up outside of Boston in a working-class tenement. She now lives in Vermont. This is the first poem she wrote about her father's abuse. She told me she wrote it to directly address the institutional powers that have allowed domestic violence to continue, like the judge who sent her father back home. Here's Linda McCarriston.
To Judge Phelan, dead long enough, a summons. Your Honor, when my mother stood before you with her routine domestic plea, after weeks of waiting for speech to return to her body, with her homemade 40s hairdo, her face purple still under pancake, her jaw off just a little, her holy of holies healing, her breasts wrung, her heart the bursting heart of someone snagged among rocks deep in a shark pool. No, not someone, but a woman there, snagged with her babies, by them, in one of hope's pedestrian, brutal turns. When, in the tones of parlors overlooking the harbor, you admonished that, for the sake of the family, the wife must take the husband back to her bed. What you willed not to see before you was a woman risen clean to the surface, a woman who, with one arm flailing, held up with the other her actual burdens of flesh. When you clamped to her leg the chain of justice, you ferried us back down to the law, the black ice eye, the maw, the mako that circles the kitchen table nightly. What did you make of the words she told you not to have heard her, not to have seen her there? Almost forgivable ignorance, you were not the fist, the boot, or the blade, but the jaded, corrective ear and eye at the limits of her world. Now I will you to see her as she was, to ride your own words back into light. I call your spirit home again, divesting you of robe and bench, the fine white hand and half-lit Irish eye. Tonight, put on a body in the trailer down the road, where your father, when he can't get it up, makes love to your mother with a rifle. Let your name be Eva Mary. Let your hour of birth be dawn. Let your life be long and common, and your flesh endure.
That's Linda McCarriston reading a poem from her new collection, Eva Mary. Were you at this trial that your mother was at? I'm assuming that this is based on an incident that really happened to you.
No, this is actually when I was very, very young, and I was not there. And this is drawn from her recounting of her efforts to divorce my father, to leave him, and going before this particular judge in these conditions, and having this particular judge tell her that the judge was an Irish Catholic, my father was an Irish Catholic, and the family mattered most of all, and she was to go back home.
Linda, this book is almost all about sexual and physical abuse, and reading it, I thought, well, that you might be just consumed by these feelings and perhaps thought of nothing else. Now, I was just looking through your first book of poems, published in 1984, and they have a completely different tone. They're poems about love and children and animals. I mean, there's both joy and pain in the books. When did you start writing the series of poems about abuse that are collected in your new book?
Many of my teachers who felt that I was potentially a good writer felt that it would damage my hope of success if I insisted on writing this work, and really encouraged me to write the other poems, the poems that were more allusive. I think much of the emotional content of the first book is very much the same as the second book. I think the second book has a great deal of love in it. It simply shows through to the grief and outrage. And the poems that actually comprise the second book were being written, beginning to be written, by the end of the first book, which was about 84. I wrote them and put them away, really did not share them with anyone because they were very frightening to me, frightening to imagine my sharing with anyone. And I can remember the very first time that I did share this particular poem with a group of people at a reading, I simply shook the entire time I read it, not with anger or hatred, but with fear. I shook with fear that some man in the audience would rise up and shoot me. I shook with fear because my father at that point was still alive, and I thought he would hear of it and come to me and shoot me. I really did. I wrote these poems with a great deal of fear.
Did your father ever find out about the poems?
They were published in Boston before his death, and he never made... By that time, I no longer had a connection with my father. I don't believe he would have seen these poems. He would not have been likely to read them.
What about your mother? Because by you making a public statement about this, you were making a public statement about her life, too.
She actually has been very supportive of this work. And I don't know if you can, I don't know what kinds of obscenity you can say on the air. I don't know if I can quote her. But she said, I knew I didn't go through all that blank for nothing. She said, I knew I didn't go through all that blank for nothing. I knew there was some reason for that suffering. And she felt that if I could make this use of that suffering, she was willing to have me do it. And she has never objected to these poems. Partly, of course, they really valorize her life, which I think deserves valorization.
If you're just joining us, my guest is poet Linda McCarriston, and her new collection of poems, Eva Mary, has been nominated for a National Book Award. There's another poem I want you to read now, and it's called Hotel Nights with My Mother.
There was a particular hotel in Lynn, Massachusetts, that we would run to when there really were no more relatives that we could run to, and my mother could continue to save face. This is a poem about it. Hotel Nights with My Mother. The hometown flophouse was what she could afford the nights he came after us with a knife. I'd grab my books, already dreading the next day's explanations of homework undone. I ran out of paper, the lies I'd invent, standing in front of the nuns in the clothes I'd lain in, full-bladdered all night, a flimsy chair-braced door between us and the hallway's impersonal riot. Years later, then, in the next city, standing before my first class, I scanned the rows of faces, their cumulative skill in the brilliant adolescent dances of self-presentation, of hiding. New teacher, looking young, seeming gullible, I know, I let them give me any excuse and took it. I was watching them all for the dark circled eyes, yesterday's crumpled costume, the marks, the sorrowful coloring of marks, the cuticles flaming and torn. I made of myself each day a chink a few might pass through unscathed.
How often did you and your mother have to flee to the flop house to get away from your father?
Oh, my. How often? It was very regular and very frequent. I wouldn't say it was every week, but I would say it was probably every month, maybe more often than once a month.
There's a line I particularly like in your poem. I'd invent standing in front of the nuns in the clothes I'd laid in full-bladdered all night.
Mm-hmm.
Was the bathroom in the hall?
Yes.
So you couldn't get out of the room to use it because there were always fights in the hall?
Yes.
That must have made it all really particularly horrible because you can't relax and you can't sleep when you need the bathroom and you can't use it.
No, it was one of the tiny little details of this way of life, which is so minor. And yet I do remember that particularly vividly, bracing the door with a chair and hearing drunken men out in the hall fighting. At least they weren't They weren't our drunken men, and they were fighting with each other, and the bathroom was out there, and my mother was beside herself, terrified, powerless, furious, beaten, and I was there with a couple of books, whatever I could grab, and wearing the same clothes and not being able to go to the bathroom all night. And then going to school the next morning to St. Mary's High School and having to fake. Not being able to go in and say, hey, you know what I did last night? You know where I spent last night? Being ashamed, leaving that hotel in downtown Lynn and walking a very circuitous route so that I wouldn't let on that I was not coming from home. So that I wouldn't have to have the humiliation of acknowledging the situation.
The nights that you spent in this flop house, did you think, well, is my life like their lives, like the lives of everybody else who lives here? Will I end up a drunk who fights in the hall like these people do because I'm here so much?
No, I didn't. I didn't have that thought at all. There are some other poems in the book that, and some poems I've been working on recently in which particular moments of sanity made their way to me. Little glimmers, little images, odd things, different things. And I would attach myself to those as possibilities for a way to live, a way to be human. The chief of the ways that I attached myself to was animals, which are very important in both of my books and very important in the work I'm doing now, that there seemed to me to be a level of consistency and sanity, of dignity, of peace, predictability, of lovingness among animals that I did not experience in my human community. And so I watched animals. I tried to learn from animals. I identified with animals. I never, when I was in this particular experience, when I was in my own home, I felt that I was in the grip of something. I was homesick. I was never at home in it. It never seemed correct to me. It never seemed right or inevitable. It seemed tremendously insane, and it seemed to me that if I could simply stay alive, hunker down, hide my soul someplace, sooner or later I could get out. I could get out, and it would be different.
Well, I want to talk with you more and have you read another poem, but first we have to take a short break. My guest is poet Linda McCarrison, and her new collection of poems, Eva Mary, has been nominated for a National Book Award. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Poet Linda McCarrison is my guest. I wanted to ask you to read another poem now, and this is a poem about how your father abused you. And the poem is called A Castle in Lynn.
A castle in Lynn. In the hometown tonight, in the quiet before sleep, a man strokes himself in the darkened theater of memory. Best old remembrance, he gets to play it as slow as he needs, as his hand, savvy tart of a million reruns, plays the tune, plays the parts. Now hand is the hard bottom of the girl. Now hand is full of the full new breast. Now hand, square hand, cruel as a spade, splits the green girlwood of her body. No one can take this from him now, ever, though she is for years a mother and worn, and he is too old to force any again. His cap hangs on a peg by the door, plaid wool of an elderly working man's park bench decline. I got there before the boys did, he knows, hearing back to her pleading, back to her sobbing, to his own voice over, like his body over hers. Laughter, mocking, the elemental voice of the cock, unhearted in its own quarter. A man is king in his own castle, he can still say, having got what he wanted. In a lifetime of used ones, second hand, one girl he could spill like a shot of whiskey. The whore only he could call daughter.
I'm not sure what image I could think of that would be more horrible than imagining your father masturbating to memories of how he abused you when you were young.
It took my realizing that that was a very real possibility for me to really get mad. And again, I'm not inclined to write poems about things that I've seen expressed well elsewhere. And it seems to me that each of these poems is not only Linda McCarriston's personal experience, but it is a realization that seems to me probably pretty consistent, pretty universal as part of the web of this kind of experience.
Did your mother know that your father was sexually abusing you?
She claims not to have known. She was so beaten, so battered herself, suffered such violent domestic rape, and was working in a very arduous job in a meat room of a supermarket, wrapping meat in a refrigerator room with her face all black and blue and red and purple. And also she was keeping the food on the table. And she went to the judge, she went to the doctor, she went to the lawyer, she went to the priest, and everyone said the same thing. And I think...
They said, stay with your husband?
Of course. Yeah, you made your bed, you lie in it. We can't do anything about this lady. And essentially, I think at some level that she did know. And at another level, she couldn't afford to know.
Did you ever succeed in getting your father to stop at all?
Well, I did, actually. First of all, I will say that I decided when I was young that I was going to kill my father because I was the youngest in the family, and I felt I had the best chance of not going to jail. And I felt that my mother would be put in jail, and my brother, who was 7 years older than me and even more fearful of my father than I was, would be put into jail. And I really... I went into their bedroom with a knife one night, and I'm writing about that now, in fact, and my mother rose and stopped me. There was a point at which I remember getting up from my father's bed he was being sexually abusive and then horribly physically abusive, kicking me around the floor and just crying and crying and crying and crying and crying and crying and saying, "You can't do this to me anymore." And I don't remember whether it went on after that or whether it went on as badly or in the same ways. Eventually, it stopped. And again, I can't even remember exactly when it stopped. But I do remember asserting a certain power to him, even when I couldn't, I couldn't tell anyone. He threatened me if I told anyone. But I did assert myself to my father, and then later in life, I did write him a letter and say, "Before you die, we have a chance, either with my therapist or your priest, to discuss what happened." And he said, "It never happened. You're crazy." And then he called my mother and said, "Little girls can be very seductive. It was all her fault."
Wow.
Well, that's textbook. That's textbook abuser response.
What'd your mother say?
My mother said to him that she wished she'd killed him. And this is terrible, Terry. And on the one hand, I feel like I'm standing here very, very naked. And I could not possibly reveal myself in this way on National Public Radio if I didn't know how many families share, if not exactly the same brutality, if not exactly the degree of madness, this problem.
When did you start finding books and when did you start thinking about writing yourself?
I wrote always. My home had no books. There was not a book in my house. And when I was young, when I was alone, I would be outside in the oak trees, or I would be drawing and writing. Writing stories, writing poems, drawing pictures of horses, particularly. And I always wrote. And I think that's probably the only reason I ever got through school. I was a terrible student in every subject. I was a disturbed kid in a lot of ways. But I wrote. I always wrote. And I won all the prizes in grammar school and all the prizes in high school. And all the prizes in college. But I was a working class female, Irish Catholic working class girl, and there was no one who really was able to say to me, you know, Linda, you could make a life as a writer.
I feel like when we end this interview now, our listeners will know a lot, and I will know a lot, or at least something of what your life was like when you were young, or at least what a small part of your life was like when you were young, but we'll know very little about who you are now. Can we just end with some sense of what your life is like now, what you've been doing?
Yes. This year I, through having set aside the funds from a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship Grant, I have taken this year and I'm working on my writing. All of the children have grown and left the house, so I'm free for the first time in my life to live daily as a writer in a wonderful, old, cranky, big house in a little village in Vermont, where my two horses are outside the kitchen door and my two dogs and cats are inside the kitchen door. And I'm very, very happy at this moment, finally free to give my day to my work, to put my work at the center of my day. For 25 years, family concerns, children have really been the center of my day. And I've had to work in addition to that, which has meant that I've always written very much around the edges of my domestic commitment. So today I live in Vermont. I live a very simple life. From the time I grew up in Lynn, I always wanted to live in northern New England, have a horse, and never wear anything except blue jeans. And I live quietly and independently with many friends, and presently I am really loving the first year of my life as a writer.
Well, Linda McCarriston, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very, very much, Terry, for inviting me to talk with you. It's been a pleasure.
And Linda McCarriston is the author of a new collection of poems called Eva Mary, just published by Tri-Quarterly Books. The book has been nominated for a National Book Award, and tomorrow, at a dinner, we'll find out who won the National Book Award for Poetry. Thank you again, Linda.
You're very welcome, Terry. Thank you.
I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.